The following sermon was delivered by Rabbi Joshua Davidson on Saturday, November 21st, 2015.
Once there was a young man who lived in a small village and was bored with his life there. He left home to work in a large city. When he had accumulated a sum of money working as a clerk in a store, he bought fashionable clothes, good shoes, and a shiny gold ring in which a very expensive diamond was set. The young man returned home for a visit and strolled around town showing off all his fine things. Everyone in the village ran to see this city slicker. They asked about his success in the big town. He boasted of the great wealth it contained. He showed everyone the rich things he was wearing. Above all, he boasted of the ring with the gleaming diamond. An old man, the town miller, went up to the young fellow who was standing in the midst of a circle of admirers and asked, "Tell me, how much does that precious jewel of yours produce?" The city youth laughed at the question of this seemingly ignorant countryman and said, "Produce? This diamond doesn't produce anything. Precious stones don't produce anything. They just are. They don't do. I know some precious stones that do produce something," said the miller quietly. "Is that so?" said the foolish young man. "Well, if there are any precious stones of that kind, I'd sure like to see them." "I'll be glad to show them to you right now," said the old man. "They're to be found right here in this village. Come with me and I'll let you see them. They are bigger and more precious than yours." "Are they for sale?" asked the greedy young man, hoping he could make a profit. The young man followed the miller to his house and watched him point to the mill which was in front of it. "See those two large stones? Those are my millstones. They're much larger than your precious gems, and they produce food for me and my neighbors every day. Does your diamond do that?" This week's Torah portion, as you've heard, is Parashat Vayetzeh, and it's got a lot of good stuff in it. It's got Jacob falling in love with Rachel, but being tricked by Laban into marrying Leah. It's got Rachel stealing her father's idols. It's got Jacob dreaming of that ladder, joining heaven and earth with angels climbing up and down upon it. But more than anything else, it's got stones, rocks, and boulders. Lots and lots of them. Let me explain. Jacob first encounters Rachel tending her father Laban's sheep. She's brought them down to the watering hole so that they can drink, but a huge stone is blocking the well. When Jacob sees the beautiful Rachel, his bravado takes over, and he strides over to the boulder and rolls it away so that the water can flow freely. He leads Rachel's sheep over to drink, and then he kisses Rachel, and he lets out a passionate cry. It's the perfect script. The girl in distress, the young hero, the test of strength, symbolized by the rock. But the most famous, most precious stone of all in Parashat Vayetzeh is the one Jacob uses as a pillow. And Harrison chanted the story so beautifully. Jacob, fleeing through the desert from his jealous brother Esau, lies down that first night to rest on the desert sand. And he takes a stone and he places it under his head and he drifts off to sleep. And then he has that most remarkable dream, the ladder, the angels, and God standing right beside him, promising him that which was promised Abraham and Isaac before him. "The land whereon thou liest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed. And thy seed shall be as the dust of the earth, and thou shalt spread abroad to the west and to the east, to the north and to the south. And in thee and thy seed shall the families of the earth be blessed." Jacob wakes up, mystified and a little afraid, and proclaims, "Surely the Lord is in this place, and I knew it not. How full of awe is this place? This is none other than the house of God. And early that morning, he takes the stone that had served as his pillow and turns it upright as a monument to God. Jacob makes of this ordinary stone a monument to God. I met a man once who for many years made Lucite countertops. He was born Jewish, but his Judaism had never been a driving force in his life until one year when he began to study with a friend of mine, a rabbi. This man ultimately moved away and their studies ended, and my friend didn't hear from his student for a couple of years. Then one day, just before Hanukkah, he received a dreidel in the mail, a Lucite dreidel. This man, a countertop manufacturer by trade, had started making beautiful dreidels. That was many years ago. He doesn't make dreidels anymore. Now he makes arks. His Jewish study had sparked something magical. It had turned him into a modern-day Jacob. Our patriarch turned stones into altars. This man turns Lucite into arks. And what's so wonderful is that he does it using the same skills with which he used to make the countertops. Now, I'm not suggesting that those of you in the rag trade should give up your clothing lines to focus on talasim and Torah mantles. Yet in our community are people with so many diverse skills that if used to perform mitzvahs, could accomplish some really wonderful results. There's one gentleman in a congregation where I used to serve who was skilled in audio technology. Before there was such a thing as live streaming over the internet, it was brought to his attention that we had some members who were unable to attend Shabbat services because they were stuck, sick at home. What did this man do? He wired the Bema microphones through the temple phone system so that people could call in and listen to us and be part of the community that way. That's a mitzvah. I couldn't have done that. It required his special skills. Maury Sayer was a man I knew in Cleveland. He was a salesman, and he traveled quite a lot selling his goods. It gets rather cold in Cleveland during the winter, and one day Maury noticed something as he'd never noticed it before. He saw a poor child with shoes that were so worn down, they were peeling off of his feet. Actually, his attention now drawn to this phenomenon of inner city life, Maury noticed quite a few kids without decent shoes. So the next time he drove through this poor neighborhood to sell his own items, it was with a trunk full of used but decent shoes for those kids. But then Maury realized something else. For kids, especially today, shoes are a source of pride and dignity, what we in Hebrew call kavod. Every kid is entitled to that dignity. Every kid is entitled to a new pair of shoes. So Maury stopped collecting used shoes and started collecting new ones. His organization, Shoes for Kids, gathered through donations tens of thousands of shoes, the whole operation beginning with a traveling salesman in the trunk of his car. Daniel Cummings is a CPA in San Francisco. One day he sent the following note with his tax form packet to all his clients. If your documented charitable donations of money or securities are less than 1% of your adjusted gross income, I will add $100 to your tax preparation fees and donate this surcharge to a qualifying organization. You still have 1 month in which to increase your donations to avoid the surcharge. Clearly, Mr. Cummings didn't do this to gain clients. He did it because he saw that he could use his position as a way to get others to do mitzvahs. Just a few examples of how people draw upon their talents or training for tzedakah. Every one of us, through our skills or our jobs or our hobbies, has the power to bring healing and hope to those in need. Of course, when your time runs low, you can always give financially. Your dollars can do a world of good if you know where to give them. Synagogues can help. That's why every temple has tzedakah boxes, and why ours has a philanthropic fund, which, thanks to the generosity of our members, gives away $1 million every year to organizations here and around the world serving the needy and inculcating the values of justice and kindness and compassion. Our temple, however, must be one of the few that has tzedakah boxes built into its walls, as if to remind us that tzedakah is foundational for us, one of the principles which supports our very being. When Jacob woke up and he set up this monument to God, he made the following promise: "If God will be with me, this stone, which I have set up as a monument, shall be God's house, Beit El. And of all that God shall give me, I will surely give to God a tenth." The Bible doesn't tell us exactly where in the desert Jacob was when these marvelous events occurred. But the rabbis imagined that they may have taken place on Har Habayit, the Temple Mount. We might imagine that Jacob's pillow was used by King Solomon as the cornerstone in the foundation of his great monument to God, the temple itself. The Talmud, in describing Solomon's temple, tells us that the king imported the finest wood and stone from all over the world so that the edifice he was to erect would be a symbol of beauty and goodness for all time. He decorated the interior with handsome tapestries and adorned it with vessels of gold and silver. The raw wood and cold stone now radiated warmth and life. But there was one room in this glamorous and complex structure that King Solomon left unadorned. And that room was called the Chamber of the Silent. The only pieces of furniture in this room were its tzedakah boxes. People entered and left the room in silence. In that room, only their hearts spoke. How much of their worldly goods they dropped into the boxes, nobody knew, nobody cared, and nobody inquired. And with the same quiet anonymity with which the charity was collected, so it was dispensed. No one knew who entered the room to give. No one knew who entered the room to receive. A person's mark in that society was measured by the modesty, the humility with which he shared his life. She shared the fruit of her hands with others. It is said that one day Michelangelo visited a contractor who sold rough pieces of marble. He came upon an ugly, misshapen piece that was obviously worth little or nothing. No doubt it had fallen or been broken in handling. The great sculptor stood pensively and looked long at the stone. Then he said quietly, "I will take it. There is an angel within that stone, and I must release it." Each of us can be the stone or the angel. Let us strive to be the angel, to be one of the Malachi Elohim in Jacob's dream, one of God's messengers of social justice and loving kindness, and find ways to repair a corner of this world, to restore to lost and hungry souls the dignity which is their due as creations of the same God who made you and me. Now that's a dream to build a temple on. Amen.